Hi, this is Andrew McGregor, and you are listening to Interviews About Change, a series of interviews between myself and a variety of famous tarot readers. You can find them on my website, thehermitslamp.com, and clicking on the tarot blog option. You can also find them by searching for either The Hermit's Lamp or Andrew McGregor in iTunes, and you can subscribe that way as well now. I'm here today with Mary Greer. Author, teacher, tarot person, blogger, and we are going to be discussing change and how it is that some people seem to manage to change a lot and some people don't. Some people tend to get stuck, and what we can do about that, how we can help ourselves, and maybe what advice tarot and working with tarot can have on getting that going. So, Mary, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Mary Greer. I've been doing tarot for 40-some years, about 44 years now. I think I was really lucky in that I discovered it while I was in college. A friend got an Eden Gray book for Christmas, and I realized right away that this was something that I wanted at the center of my life, that I wanted to teach it in college as an academic subject, and I wanted to someday write a book on it, which I saw myself doing in my 60s or 70s after gaining this lifetime of wisdom. Luckily, I wrote started writing books before that. It's just been the focus of my life, and whenever choices come up as to whether there's time enough to do tarot or something else like astrology or some of my other interests, tarot always wins out. So that helped me realize that this is and has continued to be my major focus. Whether the cards are in my life directly or not, they've kind of become the patterning for how I see the world. So I've written books on tarot and related subjects, and I've been teaching since 1976, I believe, and doing readings. So that's my life in tarot.
Great. So when it comes to changing, do you find that the people that you do readings for and the people who are coming to work with tarot, that they're looking to be changed by this process?
Certainly everybody hopes that something really special is going to happen. And when you define really special, it's that they're going to have some great insight, or there's going to be something that occurs that's going to change their perspective on the world. There's an insight into themselves, or their direction they're heading. I think when people come for reading, there's a hope for that. And one of the issues is that a really good tarot reading, a person often ends up saying, "But I knew that already." And it's ironic that some of the best readings are ones that end up not so much with a mind-blowing insight or experience of, you know, the occult and the weird or whatever that some people might think, but with much more clarity about something they already knew.
And do you think that it's just the clarity that allows them to maybe integrate or recognize and respect what they already know, or do you think something else is going on there?
Oh, I think the word respect is there, but not everybody gets that. So that's one of the jobs of a reader, is to affirm for someone that this is what's important. And that's a point I try to make to people a lot, is if they go, "But I already knew that," my general response is, "But did you know that that was either the answer to your question, or that that really is the central thing you need to be focusing on right now?" Because a lot of times with people, they know a lot of things. And, you know, we're much more aware of stuff that's going on in our lives and what the answers to things are. And so an answer that seems obvious may not have actually been obvious when the person came in. It was one of their options. It may have even been what they knew in their heart of hearts, but they, they wouldn't give credence to it. They wouldn't respect that. They would. They were second guessing themselves all over the place. And a reading is really to help you see that, yes, this is what's really most important right now.
Yeah, I might almost use the word trust. You know, a lot of people come in and get readings, and as you say, we get to a point in the reading and they're like, well, I knew that already. And I was like, yeah, but you don't trust yourself around this, or trust your spirit, or wherever that information comes from.
Right. They're not necessarily going to act on that as a key piece. And just the understanding of that, for one thing, it can help you have a lot of compassion with yourself. Because, for instance, one woman came in and she had a period in her life where not a whole lot was going on. She was feeling very lazy. She couldn't get started on any creative projects, and she was really worried about this and, you know, almost in a panic about what she's supposed to be doing. And as we talked through it, it really became more and more apparent that she was loving it, that it was the first time in her life she had had time to do this and a place to do this, and she really didn't want to be doing anything else. And so, as you say, she got to a point of really trusting that that was what was supposed to be happening in her life right then, rather than being in the center of another big creative project that, like she had done in the past. And actually, she was going through menopause. She had just made some major changes. It was really appropriate for her to go into that inner level and just experience all these changes without trying to do something about them.
Mm-hmm. I find that, you know, sometimes people, they just need to give permission to themselves or have somebody else say, hey, you know, maybe you should take permission to just be where you are, to just work where you're from, so that they can, you know, just work through that. But then there's the other side of the coin where people are caught up in situations that are not working for them, but they give themselves maybe too much permission to give it time to work on it, you know, especially in relationships. Well, you know, maybe it'll get better in 6 months or a year or, you know, whenever.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really tricky one. I mean, I learned that for myself when I was in a long-term relationship, and I, at some point, began to be aware that it wasn't going to last forever. Yeah, I wasn't quite ready to leave the situation, but I knew there were some core things that just weren't working in it, and, you know, he had tried working on, and those attempts hadn't worked. And I had several readings from friends and readings from myself that really affirmed, you know, this is not working, you need to break up with this person. And I remember one in particular where it just hit me in the face at that point that, you know, this relationship was doomed. And it was 3 years before I actually split. As I look back at it, I think those 3 years were appropriate. So as a reader, sometimes we can see something that's just right there in the face. It seems so obvious to us the person needs to get out of there, or it's not serving them in any way. But it's not necessarily imperative or the right thing to do for the person to leave right then. They may need to know this information. I don't think it would come up if they didn't need to know it. To know it, to begin to integrate it, to do whatever else needs to be done. Maybe there are certain pieces of the puzzle that haven't fallen into place, or learnings, or, you know, even just other people involved that things need to work through, you know, children in a relationship or whatever. It's not necessarily the right time. And I've seen situations where readers have badgered clients that they have to get out of a relationship, not because it's dangerous or anything, but just because it's not working for them, and or leave a job that's not working. And that really wasn't the right thing. A couple of them I even checked in on later, and it wasn't the right thing.
Yeah, shoving people out the door is never a good way to get them ready to walk out the door. So I learn with my children. You know, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and no matter how much I might like to hurry them, no matter how pointless some of the stuff might appear to me around how long it takes them to get ready, it's important to them, and trying to get them out the door any faster just never really works out well for anybody involved.
But they got to get to school on time.
Well, yeah. That's when you just start earlier, right? You're like, okay, well, it takes 45 minutes to walk out the door, so we got to start now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, reading can also help you to deal with, well, what do you have to do in the meantime? You know, or sometimes it's just be aware. I did a reading with this one woman who was in a emotionally abusive relationship, not horribly horrible, but certainly not good for her self-image. And it was very clear it wasn't going to work. And I do a process at the end where a person makes some of their own choices and decisions. And the last card was, what are the qualities she most wanted to develop in herself out of this situation? And to pick a card from the spread itself, and she picked the Empress. And something must have gone across my face because she looked at me and this kind of funny smile went across her face, and she said, you know, I know this relationship isn't working. I know it's not good for me yet, but I still have to try and be the best person I can be for this person for a while longer. And I was a little shocked, except there was that sound of truth in her voice.
Yeah.
And I realized that, yeah, there's sometimes when we still have to do something more, we have to try to our nth degree, maybe because we have to see that in ourselves. And whatever her decision was, she at least was absolutely clear about her other feelings, because there have been many moments of insight for her about how bad the relationship was for self-image and so on. But there was still some piece that she needed to do. And I was kind of in awe of, no matter what my feelings were, that you should get out of this relationship, which I was trying to keep a hold on, but I think were kind of obvious. And, you know, her insight of something she needed to do. It's one reason why I've got that end process at the end, because sometimes people just need the clarity of what's going on. Like, I needed to be really clear that my relationship wasn't working, even though there were still 3 years where I had to try things, work things out, do various stuff to complete what it was, a very long-term relationship.
Is there anything that you as a reader, and maybe in your career of developing your readings, have done to develop your capacity to sit there and watch people stay in those situations, or to deal with, you know, because I know for me, I certainly have feelings about that sometimes, especially if they're sort of long-standing clients. You know, it can be uncomfortable to sit and watch somebody opt to stay in a situation where, you know, maybe it's not an option, but seem to opt to stay in a situation where it's not working for them, and maybe is even, you know, as we're talking about in this case, a bit damaging to them. And yet the message you get back is, it's just, I can't make that change right now. How do you handle that from the other side of the table?
Well, I go into a very personal space that not everybody, not all tarot readers really believe in. I've had comments on my first book about, you know, why do you do all this, you know, centering and breathing stuff? That's crap. And, you know, for me, it's a very important piece of what I do, even if I do it very subtly. So I go into, you know, very centered kind of breathing. I ground myself. There's a whole lot of exercises around those things, because I want to step out of what I sometimes call the whirlwind, which is getting caught up in my empathy, my own, you know, my mirroring of the other person's emotions and it clicking into my own stuff. So that gets you into a whirlwind. So I want to step back out of that first. And so I do, you know, grounding and centering exercises, breathing, and, you know, it's so habitual to me now. You do practices around it so that when you need it, this practice just comes in as an automatic response. And that gets me into a center. And then if I need another step up, I ask for divine guidance. You know, holy guardian angel of the tarot, whatever term a person wants to use. And in a sense, it's almost like rising slightly above the situation. And in my consciousness, I can sit there and hold energy for the person themselves without having to do anything about it. And from that perspective, I can help them hear themselves better. And that's often the best thing I can do. And sometimes it means getting to a point where I realize that there's, or I just find myself asking them a question that helps them get to a point where something important for them to be able to hear comes out. So it's often more about consciousness and awareness on the part of the person, so that when they need to act on something, they've got everything in place to act on it, and they don't have any doubts anymore because that those awarenesses are already set in them. So that a tarot reading can often help to set those awarenesses for people. And we can get to that place when I ground and center and I kind of lift my consciousness up out of that whirlwind and ask for divine guidance, which often provides an opening. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answered your question.
That totally answers my question. I have a business support group that I work with two other individuals, and we get together monthly to keep each other on track, to brainstorm and stuff like that. And it's always amazing to me how often just the attention of the other two people being focused on you allows me to just speak more clearly and to be more present. So I think there's a lot of stuff that just simple attention can really help as well in terms of the person getting the reading, and sort of settling back just to witness as the person doing the reading can bring a lot of power there, even before the commentary or the cards are even talked about.
Right. And in addition to the witnessing, the practices that involve the breathing, the calling on higher guidance, also can create what I call sacred space, where that kind of magical, some people understand exactly what I'm saying, and other people say, I don't know what you're talking about. But there is something that can happen in that space. It's like you create an opening for something more to come in. And I think, like, I will use physical body things, open hands slightly held out to kind of create the sense of creating a circle, a space around us, and breathing into that, seeing it as a bubble of light, as I say, calling on divine guidance. In addition to the witnessing, it does work very amazingly to bring something more than I would have known the person themselves, would have gotten to just emerge and come into that space. So every little piece can add another element, that you're doing things, the witnessing, the grounding yourself, getting out of the whirlwind. Most tarot readers are strong empaths, and the danger in that is that we can get caught in that person's anxiety and want ourselves to get out of that anxious place, and therefore we try to fix things. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to recognize that, and a great way to do it is to be able to step into a neutral space and see what's happening.
Well, I'm also curious about how you read for yourself. What are the things that you use to help make that be more clear, to make sure you're not looking to see just what you want to see? How do you help yourself get into the place where you're reading for yourself?
Well, one of the keys, there's lots of them, but one of them is that very thing of am I just seeing what I want to see? It's the thing that people bring up most often. You're going to, if you're pessimistic, you're going to see everything very darkly. If you're really want this person, then you're either going to see that you're going to get them whether they even know you exist or not. You're going to read stuff into it, or you might read into it the most bleak situation. If you take that as a strength instead of a weakness, it turns everything around. By a strength, I mean that in the reading, if you watch what you are creating out of the situation, out of the reading, you will see what you're creating. And you'll become much more clear of your own patterns of viewing things or coloring it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the most valuable things that you can ever learn. What are your own patterns to when you view a situation, when you really, really want something, how do you distort it? And if you observe yourself in your readings, you can start seeing how you distort reality, to simplify it, to make it be either your pessimistic or optimistic view, or you know, old patterns coming up, whatever it is. So that's one thing.
Sure. Well, that's great. You can see your own patterns of, say, attachment overriding your reasonable interpretation of the cards, maybe, or, you know, whatever way it shows up for the given person.
Yeah, and then if you want a much more objective look, go to you know, someone else if you find that you really are caught in those patterns. Once you get to see the patterns, you can begin to look through them and can become more objective with yourself. And that's the other thing, is that there's lots of different techniques for becoming more objective or seeing things in a more rounded way. And most of those are in my book, 21 Ways to Read a Tarot Card, because it does focus on you're reading one card for yourself through the whole book and going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And as you do, you find which of these techniques, these different 21 techniques, really work best for you, which ones give you the clearest picture, which ones don't. I should mention that although the focus is reading for yourself, because that's what you're doing as you go through the book, there's also all along shows you how to turn it around and use these same techniques when you're reading for someone else.
That's fantastic.
Or reading with someone else, where you can guide them through these techniques, or that you can turn it around and use it as a way to get more objective with somebody else's material. So it's kind of a training or practice, both for reading for yourself and for reading for other people. But certain techniques will help you be more objective than others. And what those are going to be more individual to you, which is why I've got this whole variety in the book. It's really for people to find out which ones work best for them or not.
If somebody's sitting down for a reading with you and, you know, you start talking to them about what's going on, and you start getting a lot of, that's just not the way it is from them. You know, a lot of lack of recognition. What do you do at that point? How would you handle that?
First off, I agree with them. I, you know, go, oh, well, you know, tell me how it is. Or one of my major tools, because I do interactive tarot readings, is I ask them to simply describe the card. So if they're saying, oh, that's not what the card's about, I say, oh, okay, well, would you simply describe the card? And then I take that step through a couple of other ones where they go into the feelings and emotions of the and attitudes of a person or persons on the card, and fairy tales and various other things that bring out their own stuff. Now, I'm accepting that totally, because that is one level of reality, and it's what's real for them. It's what their projections are, which means they're going to go around projecting this onto the situation, and it's going to influence the situation. It's going to create certain things in their life. But I'm also aware of traditional meanings of the cards, many of which are things that they say, even if they know nothing about the cards at all. It's almost like you can check, have a little checklist and go, okay, there's that meaning and that meaning and that meaning and that meaning. And then every once in a while there'll be one that's, whoa, that's totally out there. I've never heard that one before. But if it rings true, there's something in their voice, then it's something that's telling me that there's something more here, something that I may not have seen. And I'm trying to think of, I mean, I've got an old example that I give all the time. I'm almost embarrassed to bring it out, but I'll go ahead and say it again because it's a good one. And that's two people who were breaking up. The guy wanted out of the relationship. His partner wanted to keep the relationship, and so before their final split, they wanted a reading from me. And the card that represented something she was giving him was the Ace of Wands. And She saw it immediately as a new beginning for their relationship. She'd come into some money. They would now be able to do all the things they had dreamed about doing. You know, they could get stuff they had never been able to have, a nicer apartment, whatever. So she just saw it as this new beginning for them. And I asked him to simply describe the card, and he couldn't. And I tried to help him. Well, is there a hand in a cloud? You know, just be very literal with me. Describe the card. And he'd look at it and shake his head. He'd been describing the other cards fine. And he shook his head, and we sat there for the longest time. And finally, I mean, I just let him sit there. And finally he burst out, "It's a carrot on a stick, and I don't want it."
Wow.
Yeah. So totally new meaning for the Ace of Wands for me.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely true. And his partner heard it for the first time in an absolute way where she knew that there was no going back. Yeah, it was absolutely clear.
Yeah, I think that sometimes those reading-specific interpretations of the cards, they're not about anything else. They're about the moment of insight that everything is kind of built around in that reading. And they may never surface around that card again for anybody else. It can be really intense and really powerful.
Yes, it can. And if I sat there and said, no, that's not what the Ace of Wands is. This is a new beginning. She's offering you, you know, new opportunities. Or I could have tried to justify it. You know, she's giving you a chance for, you know, in breaking up the relationship for you to start anew. But that wasn't her perspective. You know, instead it was just, you know, we sat there and we all heard the truth in his voice. And, I mean, he even shocked himself with it, you know, his own clarity. So, but there are times when I know a person is actually fooling themselves. And what I do is I find that if you say yes, 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 and, you know, have them go into their own descriptions, there's often a point where they suddenly say the very thing you were telling them that they were denying before. And this happens over and over and over again. It's almost like you keep backing up a little bit, going, oh, yeah, tell me more, and inviting them into this kind of space, and suddenly they fall into this pothole that's been there all along that they've been saying isn't there, and suddenly they've fallen into it and gone, oops, there it is. So by agreeing with people, it opens them up. It eliminates their defenses. Hmm. And they can often arrive at the truth themselves.
It's very Socratic, right?
Pardon?
It's very Socratic. You know, like Socrates' techniques of, you know, you start,
Oh, yeah,
that's okay. So you're the best government official ever. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Tell me about it. Tell me about this. Tell me about that. And next thing you know, you get to this point where it's like, oh, so really not. Okay, fair enough. Well, let's go on.
Yeah, it's very tricky that way. And interestingly, I taught at a college for a while that was the basis of our educational system. So I think maybe I learned some stuff from that, which, you know, it's always been very near to my heart, is that people themselves really have the answers inside. That's my basic belief. There's times that, you know, where they're going to fool themselves, and no matter what you say, there'll be some people who walk out absolutely convinced of whatever they came in with, and you may have, you know, told them it wasn't so all the way through. It was absolutely clear, no question about it. And they're going to go away either saying that you don't know what you're talking about, you were a terrible tarot reader, or they're going to go away saying you told them just what they knew all along, and they'll say that you said exactly the opposite of everything you said.
Hmm.
And you can't do anything about that. Those people who are in that much denial, it's not your responsibility to fix them. It really isn't. And, you know, you do the best you can in whatever style, you know, is your style, whatever approach is your approach. Occasionally there have been times when I told somebody, you know, this is a terrible situation. You really need to look at this. There was one woman, I told her, you have to get out of this situation, because although the person wouldn't admit it, everything, when I would ask her, is this person physically abusing you? Are you in danger of your life? She would hem and haw and go around it, and you know, she didn't want to admit it, but everything was screaming that something was horribly wrong. And, you know, I just said, you know, you need to go for more help, but there's something really wrong. Get out of there, whether it's temporary or not, but you have to get something, because she was in such heavy denial that she couldn't. She was trying to tell me on one level that something was very wrong. It was absolutely clear. And on the other level, she was saying, oh, well, it's not that bad. But, you know. And so there was one time when I absolutely told somebody, get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's going to come up for every reader at some point, that you're going to break every rule you have about giving, you know, telling somebody absolutely what to do.
Yeah.
But for the most part, in almost all normal situations, a person's going to come to it for themselves. And there's a few situations, one where this woman wanted to know whether she should move to the East Coast to be with the love of her life from high school. And as it turned out, what I finally got her to, and she skirted around it forever, was that she hadn't been in contact with him since high school, and this is like, you know, 25 years later.
Yeah.
And she had found his address, and she kept pretending to me as if they were in contact, but then it was coming out that it was really spirit contact and all these other things. And at some point, I realized there was nothing I was going to say that was going to get her out of this fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
All she wanted was for me to say, yes, this is the person for you, and you need to go be with him. It was the only thing that she was going to hear, and anything else she was not going to hear. And she was going to twist anything that I said so that it would say that. And that there was really, I'm not a therapist. She hadn't come for, you know, she hadn't gone to a therapist. This person was not normal, especially not around this issue. And, you know, it wasn't my job in a, half-hour reading to fix this person.
I did a reading for this woman a long time ago now, and she was one of those people who likes to just sit there and not say anything. And although I'm not really that entertained by reading for people like that anymore, when I was first starting out, I took it as a challenge. I'm like, all right, I'll read for you. You don't tell me anything. I'll read for you. Sure, we'll see what comes up, you know? And so I'm reading for her, and we're talking about her relationship, and we're talking about the violence and the problems and all these things, and why she's feeling so bad is because of this and all its consequences in the other areas of her life. And she's nodding the whole way through. She's just nodding and nodding and nodding. And she's like, I'm like, so that's what I have to say to you. And she's like, you know, you're right about all of that, except for what's causing it. And I was like, really? Okay, what's causing it? And she's like, demons. Demons are causing it. And at that point, I was like, well, I don't think I can help you with that. And offered her money back, which she didn't want. And I was just like, wow, some people are just so attached to a given agenda that you just can't reach them. You know, there's no way to get through that.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem right often in those situations to take somebody's money, because there's nothing you can do for them. There's nothing. It's not working. And I don't want to blame the person, because that's usually not going to help at all. It's just get out of it as quickly as you possibly can, because you're not in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is, say something once very clearly to the person, you know, what you're seeing. And if it becomes absolutely clear that they're, you know, not willing to get it, that there's something in them, whether it's they're psychotic or whatever, or just in absolute denial, it's best to just, you know, terminate the reading. And because it becomes a farce after that, you're sitting there in the middle of something. As long as you get, you know, at least one clear statement in, which might be, I really think you need to get help from, and if you can give them a phone number or options. You can let them know that you don't agree with their perspective, mm-hmm. that the card thing, you don't agree with it, and then just let it go. To try and force somebody in that kind of state to see something that they're not ready to see can actually be harmful.
Yeah. And there are limits. We can counsel, we can advise, we can say directly, hey, this is harming you. But, we're not psychiatrists, therapists, physiotherapists, yeah. whatever. People come, I had this guy come in and want to show me some problem he had on his leg. And I was just like, no, man, keep your pants on and go home. Go to the doctor. I don't want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's good to have boundaries around, I don't give legal, financial, medical advice, all these different things that the minute you hear something come up along that line where a person wants you to take that role, you just have your, statement ready. That you can say with absolute clarity that, you don't go there, you don't do that. Because people will try to force you into all these different roles so they can say, well, my tarot reader told me to do something.
Yeah. Do you set that up ahead of time? Do you tell people before they walk through the door, hey, I'm not going to talk to you about your congestive heart failure or, whatever?
If they bring up their question or issue is around an area, what's happening physically with me or whatever, I tell them right then, I can't answer that question. I won't go there. I can't give that kind of advice because, I don't give legal, medical advice, whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. If it seems appropriate, I can suggest the rewording of the issue in a way that works for me. And it has to work for me because otherwise I can't do the reading. So if somebody wants to know, how's their operation going to go, if they're willing to look at something around what they most need to look at, in themselves around the anxiety they're feeling about the operation or if they're open to it, the symbolism of their situation, which I don't offer to most people because most people aren't really open, don't understand what that level of work is. But here in California, luckily, there are people that are willing to look at the symbolism of a situation. Mm-hmm. But I'm very, very careful with those situations. But what can they do about themselves? Not what's happening to them, how that's going to turn out.
Right.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable. I don't offer predictive readings. It's not that there won't be some predictions perhaps that come up in a reading, but I don't normally answer any kind of questions about, what's going to happen. It's like you're going to find out in 3 days whether you're going to get the job or not. In my experience, and I've done this over and over in classes where we do experiments in predictive readings, it comes out 50-50 if it's a yes-no question. With a few people in the classes over the years being able to be much more on target with doing those yes-no predictions. There's often, one person out of every 20 or 30 people who pretty consistently can get a better answer than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, I suggest, well, maybe that is, you do work more as a psychic. Maybe this is part of your gift. But for the most of us, we discover that, these predictions, very specific predictions that we try making where the next week we can come back and see how accurate they are not, more accurate than flipping a coin.
Right.
So, yeah, and I really encourage, anybody who's very seriously doing, professional tarot readings to do a number of very hardcore predictive readings. Down to the, you have to see where the line is. And something like, if a repair person said they're going to be there between 10 and 2 tomorrow, ask the cards and yes, no spread whether the person is going to be there before noon or afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And do a bunch of those and find out what your rate is on those kinds of readings. And then you can predict things based on trends of who somebody is today and who they've been in the past. That's how most real predictions work. But when it's really something that you've got, the person themselves has no control over, it's not part of their personality characteristics that are going to determine the outcome, then it really is not that reliable.
And I love the idea of testing yourself. I think it's really important. And one of the things that I've found through testing kind of that side of myself is there's a certain set of feelings that arise in me when one of those feelings comes true that is going to be way more accurate. You know, there's a certain physical sensation, a certain emotional almost something that comes through. And whatever comes through at that time, if it's predictive, is usually substantially higher than at any other time. If someone just asks me, is this going to happen or that going to happen? And if I don't have any feeling about it, I'm like, I don't know. But every now and then I hit that sort of special spot and I'm like, okay, well, this is something that's coming through me, however. And I think that kind of looking for those markers of what might highlight where you are getting some of that information, if you are at all, could be really helpful too.
Yeah, and that's part of actually psychic development training, and it's bringing in more of the psychic to what would be considered otherwise, tarot reading that's just focusing on traditional meanings. You really do need to hone those abilities in yourself if you're going to be a professional reader, and know when they're not there, so and have ways of reading when you're not. Because traditionally that's been the problem with any psychics, is that there are days when they're really on, or certain situations when they're really on, and it's absolutely amazing what comes through, and days when they're not. And because they're working professionally, they have to learn to fake it. Mm-hmm. I like tarot because I can set out at the beginning that that's not the way I operate, and if it comes through very clearly, I know from those inner sensations you're talking about that this is something that's got a very high probability. It's something that's coming through me, and past has shown it to be accurate. Then it's almost like an extra added gift of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But not something I'm getting paid to do on a regular basis. It's one reason why I didn't go the route of really working psychically, because I tend to be really off and on, and I also tend to sense, I've got a system in me that always goes for the opposite. If I'm doing the Rhine cards, I'll come up so absolutely wrong that it's off the charts.
Right.
Which is a sign that you're really operating psychically, but you're not trusting it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's moments that just come through so clearly that I know beyond the doubt. But I think there was sort of a mechanism in me that kept me from going that route.
Mm. So I'm curious about, you've talked about when you hear the truth or feel the truth in what somebody says, and, you know, the sort of, the feeling I get from how you're talking about your reading work is that you are reading the cards and also paying a lot of attention to where the person is at or how the person is receiving the message or passing messages back to you. Is that accurate? Does that make sense?
Definitely. I mean, that's what my skill is, and where, you know, if you want to call it a psychic gift, is that I really can hear people when they are speaking true. And I often will, you know, pause in the moment and have somebody repeat something they've just said and ask them to really listen to themselves. I can see it in their physical bodies. I can hear it in their voices. And almost always it's also resonating with those deeper layers of meaning of what I know about the cards. So when those moments happen, I really try to have the person hear themselves. And often it is a moment when they realize that they need to trust this insight in themselves, that out of all these possibilities that they've been considering, that this one is really closer to the heart of what they feel or they know or whatever. And when you witness it, using the words you used before, when I act as the witness of it, it helps them to trust themselves. And so the most successful reading for me is when a person gets something for themselves. It's going to be more likely to create change in themselves than any truth that I give them. I could be 100% right, and it's not necessarily going to make any change, positive change, in a person's life. If they get something in themselves, then they're more likely to be able to act on it, to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want somebody going away going, oh, my tarot reader was absolutely right. I'd rather have them go away saying, my tarot reader was wrong, but I realized while I was doing this that this was the right answer. So sometimes I even set myself up to say the wrong thing because, and here's that intuitive ability in me, because I intuit in the moment that their correction of it is going to be what is the key. Mm-hmm. And so if they call me wrong and themselves right, but it spurs them to take the action that they know in their heart that they're going to do, then that's success.
It's like the measure of success is whether or not the person's life gets better or they make good choices or have good realizations, rather than, well, I was 100% true in every word that I said in that reading.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be perfectly fine to be 100% wrong in the reading if the person themselves comes to the insight that makes their life and their changes better. And I do want to mention something that I wanted to mention all along. One thing is that change by itself is not necessarily good.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so to just opt for change is not always the right thing to do. But we do talk about human development, and that implies that we continually change, and that's what life is. You know, life is all about change. So there's this odd paradox there that, you know, we have to learn to live with change. We have to learn to move with change and create change in our lives. But change is not always good. It's not always the most appropriate thing. So, a phrase I've come to, which kind of, you know, coalesces all this stuff, is tarot helps you meet whatever comes in the best possible way.
Hmm. That's
and
great.
It's still not the ideal statement, but it's the closest I've been able to come so far. So it helps the person themselves, the client, meet whatever is going to come, whether, you know, if they say, well, is this going to happen or that going to happen, or should I take this job or move to Alaska. It's not so much that it's going to give you the answer, but that whatever you do and whatever things happen to you, the information you get in the reading is going to help you to react in the moment in the best possible way. Sometimes because you've tried things on for size in the reading, or you've gotten a new perspective, which is a change in itself, you know, you just have a new tool or sometimes a symbol that can help you focus. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is, but something in the reading helps you to meet that.
That's great. And do you have any sort of practice around how you talked about the depth of the symbolism that you go? Or the depth of the, you know, when we were talking with the health stuff where you might interpret it symbolically, and you sort of alluded to other stuff in things you talk to. Do you decide or do you intuit how deep you take people or how far into the symbolism you go?
I try things out or I ask them directly. Like if I see a very strong union cast to the reading. In other words, we're getting into mythic levels that Jung dealt with deliberately and go very obviously along with some of his concepts. I might mention, you know, are you familiar with Jungian psychology? And if they say absolutely not, or, you know, they can't stand it, I take a different approach. If they say they're not familiar with it, I try to let go of any of the Jungian terminology, but I still may, you know, focus on the, you know, basic concepts of what's going on. And if they say, you know, they get it, then we can start talking Jungian. And that can often lead us, you know, whatever approach we can find that works can often take us much more quickly to a deeper level of working with the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of try a little bit out, see where it goes. And one thing I try to do very strongly is use the person's own words and terminology as much as possible. I try to enter their world and operate within their framework, which is why it's so interactive in what I do, is because, you know, I don't want to give them stuff from my world and my perspective on things, unless something screams at me that I really should do this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to use their vocabulary. I want to use their value system, and help them maybe to become more aware of what that is in themselves, but not with judgments about it being right or wrong. I might help them clarify for themselves where they're judging something is right or wrong. So it's their judgment, their terminology around it. But occasionally there's somebody, I recently read at a huge pagan gathering, several thousand people, in Northern California, and it was wonderful. We were reading, you know, about initiation levels of, you know, different Wiccan traditions, priestesses that are, you know, and priests that are working at the highest level, and the imagery and things that they are working with at those levels of their work, and it was just so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved it. I could then also, the next reading might be for one of the hotel service people who came into the area and wanted a reading and wanted something very tangible about how they were going to pay their next bill. You know, and I don't give financial advice, but we could look at, you know, what the issue really meant for them,
mm-hmm.
what it was about, and in a way that was, you know, helpful for them to make their own decision about that, or you know, to perhaps see some options they hadn't. But it was still really exciting. One example of this is one time I looked at the Rider-Waite Knight of Pentacles. And for the first time, I knew it was there, but for the first time, it just jumped out at me. There's this oak leaf on his helmet. And I don't know where it came from, but I just turned to the person and I said, you know, right now in this moment, this is just reminding me of the Oak King. And she said that was a major figure from her inner work. I hadn't realized she was pagan or Wiccan, but that there was an oak king in the fairy tradition world that she worked with very deeply, and that was the key to the whole reading. But the reading suddenly went from a mundane level to the inner realm level, and you know, luckily I was able to go there with her, and it was a very powerful, very deep reading.
Fantastic.
But, yeah, it's, you know, the more reading, study, work you do with a lot of different traditions, and the more you understand about different perspectives, the more you can be flexible, I think, to go with somebody where they go without making judgments about it. You know, I even read for Christians, and I kind of go revamp, you know, childhood Christianity to kind of sit there and be in that Christian space with them.
Yeah, I have a bunch of Catholics who come and see me, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you should go and maybe talk to this saint, or go and do this, or go back to Mass. Why have you not been going to Mass, you know, or whatever, you know? When you hear in them a specific place that they're coming from and a kind of core belief around them, and you can engage that and work with it, it can be really powerful, even if it's totally different than what you believe or practice.
Exactly. And I think that's so important to be able to be there in the person's own world as much as possible. Occasionally, you need to step back from it, but that's because every single rule we can make about tarot, there's always those moments of exception.
You know, is there anything else you want to say in closing? I know you have some events coming up that you wanted to chat about.
Actually, because there's a variety of things coming up, I'd just like people to go to my blog. I'm going to be putting those up today, I hope. By the time you get this out, they'll already be up. So it's marygreer.wordpress.com. And I've got lots of great articles, and there's an events page. And all the wonderful events that are coming up, conferences and web seminars, are going to be on there.
And for people who know me personally, I don't read a lot of blogs. I don't read a lot of stuff on the internet, mostly because I don't have the time. And so Mary's blog is one of the few that I read religiously. It's just such a source of inspiration for me at times that it's well worth checking it out and reading it.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome. I love it. This is some stuff that's really triggered a lot of exploration work in my own practice that's kind of come out of reading your stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you. That really feels good. I appreciate it.
I'm also curious, because I've never really considered this. You talked about when you were talking about grounding and the spiritual side of things and that, people who read who have nothing to do with any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How? How do people? I've never met anybody who worked with the cards who was not, at the very least, into yoga or breathing or something. I can't think of anybody that I know who has an interest in actually reading the cards that is not also spiritual in that way. So I'm just curious, what those people are like. Where do they come from?
Yeah, I don't really know because I don't usually get them in my classes, I don't get them in my classes. Actually, maybe one or two times I have, and they've said right away that this isn't for them, and they've left. Mm. If something that just didn't work for them. But I find it, looking at the comments on my books on Amazon, and I've been on a lot of the tarot discussion lists, internet forums, and every once in a while somebody comes up and goes, all that stuff about, meditating or breathing or, centering, what crap, you don't need that for reading. Mm. And it always is a little shocking to me, and then I have to realize that there are approaches that are quite different from mine, and I can't assume that everybody thinks the same way or experiences things the same way. So it's a great reality check for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating.
Who go to different levels on these things. They may do some breathing, but they wouldn't ever call on a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating to me that what I perceive as essentially a spiritual tool, that people who are, non-spiritual would even go there. Or would be involved. It'd be like, to me, it would be like going to Catholic Mass and saying, yeah, well, I go because it's nice, but I don't believe in God. I just like the words they say or something. It just seemed like something would be disconnected there, but who knows? Maybe I'll meet somebody like that and I can ask them at some point.
Well, it's interesting. When you can interact with people directly, what I found is that some people who say they absolutely don't believe in any rituals around tarot, they would never use them. If you watch what they do, when they read for somebody, they're actually going through a bunch of little rituals. So it's how they're defining something in their mind based on, their whole life experience and their belief system that kind of defines it. And I think most people do have little rituals, whether they're for, calming, centering, grounding, whatever.
Mm.
And they just, the world that they've lived in hasn't called them that and has derided the term ritual, and therefore they won't accept that what they're doing is that. So again, if I'm interacting one-on-one, I try and interact with a student around what they are doing, how do they frame what they're doing.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe it's more of a semantic issue ultimately than a practical issue.
Yeah, it's more than semantic, though. It's partly semantic, and it's partly a deep worldview, how they perceive the world that they're doing it. And since we live in, primarily in a subjective universe, who's to say that their worldview is more right than mine?
Sure.
It's mostly then to help them do what they do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I hope that you've enjoyed listening to this episode and that you will subscribe through the website, thehermitslamp.com, where you'll also get updates on my tarot deck creation process and future interviews with people like Art Rosengarten, Lon Milo Duquette, and James Wells. Thanks for listening.